Photographs of them. The men wear blue cloth about their heads, covering all but their eyes, thus the Arabic name Tuareg, people of the veil. But the Tuareg have yet another name. It's what they once called themselves, the Imuhar. It means the free men. For centuries, the Tuareg tribesmen were renowned throughout all Africa for their warlike disposition and their ferocious independence. But no more. When that ancient race of free men lost its freedom, and why it lost its freedom, comprise the rest of the story. Very rarely is tribal history handed down from one generation to the next reliably. Yet what you're about to hear is one of those rare exceptions. It was the dry time. Even in the grazing lands around the Agahar Mountains, the long drought had made it more important than ever now for the wandering Tuareg to move on to fresh pastures. They had to move their livestock to fresh pastures. Otherwise, the livestock would surely perish. So the Tuareg leaders met. Ages of tribal tradition and Muslim heritage were reenacted as they came together. But this meeting would be unlike any other ever before, because this time, for the first time, despite the clear and present threat to their way of life, there was a reason to postpone their departure. An occasion which, according to many of the tribal elders, must be observed. How long must they wait? Precisely 10 days. In 10 days, the glorious event would take place. After that, the Tuareg could abandon their parched place and seek verdant fields for their cattle and abundant water for themselves. But could any event, no matter how glorious, be worth risking the consequences? The tribal council debated, but in the end all agreed. All agreed. A life of imagining what it might have been like to experience the grand occurrence only 10 days hence would be least tolerable of all. And so the Tuareg waited. Day after day, the cloudless sky looked down upon the arid landscape. The cattle grew thin, but the tribesmen had made their decision. And so they waited until the 10th day. And on that 10th day, they witnessed the wonderful thing which, some say, lives in the minds and the hearts of the Tuareg even unto this day. The reason we know what happened did happen is that it happened not in the dim distant past, but in 1983. You see, that was the year the self-described Imuhar, the free men, lost their freedom and became slaves again. Slaves to modern technology. For you see, the Tuareg, even in their remote region, were receiving television transmission. And thus did they, in 1983, delay their annual migration to fresh pastures and endanger their livestock's lives. Thus did they remain 10 parched, perilous days huddled near their television sets. For no other reason than to catch the last episode of the season of the American TV program, Dallas. Now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is Stephen Moses, president of the Center for Long-Term Care Reform and visiting fellow at Paragon Health. We're going to be talking about something that's been in the news constantly now for about the last 2 or 3 months, Medicaid fraud. And we're going to talk about what it is, why it's happening, and why it's bad for taxpayers, and most importantly, why it's not so great for the people who rely on Medicaid, and again, that's Medi-Cal here in California, for their health care. We're going to also then try to talk about something a little more positive after that, the latest research on aging well from Age Wave guru Ken Dykewald, and then insights into artificial intelligence and its increasing role in long-term care. Steve, welcome back to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you. Good to be with you again.
Good to have you. You know, just so the audience remembers, and so you and I can remember, you and I go back about 30 years, and we have probably been talking about government waste, fraud, and abuse for about 29 and a half years. And believe it or not, Steve, we have a caller. So stand by. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question?
Hi, I actually don't have a question, but I want to say thank you for having Ryan on.
Is this his mother?
It is not, but his mother and his family must be so proud of this young man. Well, and I want to tell him, I hope he's listening, thank you for giving this old lady some hope. Because, you know, even if he's only a husband and a father, he's going to be successful. And anyway, thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling. I'm sure he'll hear that. So thank you so much. Yeah, you know, it's really, I have to say, and thank you for that call. I mean, Steve, you heard the tail end of our first guest, but I mean, it really is heartening to see a new generation of young people, you know, taking up the stuff that we were doing, you know, what, 50, 60 years ago in college and high school and that kind of stuff. So it is hard.
We need them.
Yes.
And we've made their generation much more difficult because of all the focus on the baby boomers.
So anyway, so Steve, you know, let's talk a little bit about you for a second, just to remind the audience. I call you a think tank guy. You've been a researcher and an advocate regarding long-term care and healthcare issues for, like I said, at least 30 or more years. Tell us a little bit about the Center for Long-Term Care Reform, how you got started in that, and then also tell us about your work at the Paragon Health Institute.
Sure. Well, my professional roots are actually in the federal government. I worked there for a number of years, specializing in Medicaid and long-term care issues especially. And I came across this phenomenon that although most people think of Medicaid as a welfare program that you have to impoverish yourself to qualify for, the way it actually works is to the advantage of middle-class and affluent people who can still qualify and preserve wealth and actually co-opt the best services Medicaid has to offer to the loss of the poor people Medicaid was supposed to serve. Well, that idea, that analysis, didn't go over big with my federal bosses, so I left government in 1989 and worked as director of research for a long-term care insurance company, making the case that long-term care insurance is hard to sell when the government is giving it away. We got some serious federal legislation passed in 1993 to close some loopholes and establish more incentives for people to plan for long-term care, but the job wasn't done. So when my company got bought by GE and I couldn't really do what I was doing with the media, my hands tied because of the sensitivity of the issues I was dealing with, I spun off and created the Center for Long-Term Care Reform, which is dedicated to ensuring access to quality long-term care for all Americans by encouraging alternatives in the private sector to the default position, which is basically doing nothing and ending up on Medicaid. So I created that organization along with a co-founder in 1998. We've been around for 28 years. And somewhere along the way, I met Brian Blaze, who's president of the Paragon Health Institute. And we got interested together in some of my issues. He brought me in to testify when he was working in Congress to the Oversight Committee. And we've been working on these issues together ever since. And for me, as a visiting fellow at Paragon, and I can't recommend Paragon enough for its creativity in the area of health reform of all kinds, not just long-term care.
You guys are doing some great research, and anybody that's interested in learning more about what's going on in our healthcare system, I highly recommend the Paragon Health Institute website. There's a wealth of knowledge. Let's talk a little bit about this Medicaid thing. Now, you know, Medicaid, you know me, I do a lot of research. I'm kind of a geek in that regard. But I looked at this, the history of the Medicaid program, and obviously it was, you know, for, again, it's Medi-Cal in California, and it was, you know, started about the same time, I believe at the same time as Medicare, correct, Steve?
Yes.
And it was a very, very, I want to say, limited program. But over this last, what is it now, 50 years, 60 years, they've tacked on so many other programs that it's become probably unmanageable at this point. And in many regards, as we're finding, is it's rife with waste and fraud and abuse and it's really bankrupting the country. Tell us a little, give me your perspective of how Medicaid has evolved and what some of the biggest problems that we have today with it are.
Well, Medicaid is a perfect example of the old saying, good intentions often lead to bad results. The Medicaid program was set up in an, if not unique, a very unusual way, as a partnership between the federal government and the states. And the federal government sets the overall rules and regulations, but the states administer the program. And the funding for the program is really at the root of all the problems that we could talk about today. The way it's set up is that the states spend money on Medicaid services, and then the federal government comes in and reimburses the state, and it's a federal match that is at least 50-50. So the state spends $50, they get $50 back from the federal government. But it also gets much higher, to 85% of the cost returned to the state government. Now, because that financial spigot is wide open like that, the more states spend, the more they get back from the federal government. So why should you worry about having too many people on Medicaid, maybe some of them fraudulent, when it's bringing more money into the state and allowing you to pay for more services?
It's really an open-ended slush fund for politicians to be able to create classes of people who become dependents on the government and shift other and spend money elsewhere, right? I mean, isn't that really what it is?
It's an open invitation to bring more and more people onto Medicaid, which means they become dependent. And that has had disastrous consequences, especially in the area of long-term care, because Medicaid has paid for most long-term care since 1965, which has really sent the message because of the way that it pays and handles eligibility, it reduced the incentive people would have to think about long-term care when they're young and healthy and affluent and might be able to plan for it or buy insurance the way they do for health care and their fire insurance and all the other potential catastrophes that could happen to them. But Medicaid kind of took long-term care off the table, and we're ending up with the consequences now of so many boomers getting older, getting to the point where they're going to need long-term care, and we lack programs that are sufficient to supply that care and pay it for it adequately.
Whose idea was this, Steve, at the federal level, that it was a good idea to have an open-ended entitlement program with no universal, you know, limits on the budget and what could money needed to be printed to just dole out to the states? How did that happen?
Well, as I said, it was well-intentioned despite the ultimate consequences. We were in a period of the great society, Lyndon Johnson and his cohorts, and we were going to have butter as well as bullets. We had the Vietnam War going, and yet we were trying to take war to poverty. We declared war on poverty, and poverty won is the unfortunate consequence.
So explain to me back, you know, you on the Paragon website, you wrote an article back in, I want to say, July of 2024, entitled Medicaid's $100+ billion leak. And this was kind of a harbinger of what we were seeing now in many regards with all this fraud that's being uncovered. Could you want to run through what your primary points in this article were? Because I think it was a great article.
Well, thank you. Yeah, if I had to pick the one key thing of all the possibilities to fix Medicaid long-term care, this would be it. And it has to do with how people with wealth qualify for Medicaid, even though it's a program for the poor. There's two aspects of the eligibility determination. You have to have low income and you have to have low assets. You read about that all the time. It doesn't work anything like the way it's expressed, for example, by the New York Times in a column they did about dying broke. The way it really works is on the income side, you can have substantial income, $10,000 a month, if your private medical expenses or long-term care are comparable in size, because they deduct your private expenses from your income before asking if you're low income. Well, that's fine. You have to produce evidence, receipts. You've got to show you really did spend that money to get down to that level of income. But on the asset side, it's completely different. You don't have to spend down for long-term care or for medical expenses. You can spend down just by buying exempt assets. Well, what's exempt? Well, home equity up to over $1 million in most places, a car of unlimited value, a business including the capital and cash flow of unlimited value, your tax-deferred retirement savings, and so on, all personal belongings and household furnishes, all totally exempt. So if you've got a few $100,000 and you want to qualify for Medicaid, you just use it to fix up the house or buy a new car or get some of this other stuff. Now, the next question would be, well, why would people who can have that kind of money want to go on Medicaid, which has such a terrible reputation for poor access and quality? Well, the answer is, in the elder law bar that specializes in artificially impoverishing people to put them on Medicaid will tell you this, don't use up all your money, save some so you can start paying privately. So if you go to the nursing home or the home health agency, you are a private payer paying private pay rates, which are half again as much as what Medicaid pays. So they roll out the red carpet to get you. Guess what? You get in. Once you're in, you flip the switch, convert to Medicaid, and there's nothing they can do about it. Under state and federal law, they cannot kick you out just because your source of payment changed from private pay to Medicaid, even though it's bankrupting the health care providers. The effect of this is that the very best services that are available under Medicaid in the nicest neighborhoods and the best nursing homes get taken by the middle class and affluent. And the poor people who tend to live in the less desirable neighborhoods where the worst nursing homes and health care providers are, they end up getting the crumbs from the least of desirable services available through Medicaid. So what we need to do is change the rules on asset spend down. Yes, spend down, but show that you spent down for care and became part of the solution by paying privately for your long-term care instead of part of the problem by overloading Medicaid when, if it weren't for this crazy, mixed-up, corrupt, perverse incentive in the system, you would have planned early, bought some long-term care insurance from Barry Fisher, and not ended up in this fix.
So it seems to me, and I mean, we're coming up on a break here in a minute or a couple minutes, so we're going to take this on to the next segment because this is fascinating. At least it is to me. But it seems to me that when I look at all this Medicaid fraud that's happening in the various different states, you know, yet some of it has to do a lot with hospice care, okay, which is supposed to be end-of-life palliative care. There's also this other aspect of it that a lot of the people don't have to go to nursing homes anymore to be paid for by Medicaid. There are home care waivers. And so for in-home support services, that can be and the caregiving can be self-directed to family members. So this has created a cottage industries of fake businesses that are sucking money out of the Medicaid system. I got to go to a break here, Steve, but I'm going to put you on hold, and I want to take up this topic on the other side of the break. So stay tuned. Thanks, Steve. Folks, stay tuned, folks. I just disconnected Steve, and I'll be right back.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Bergotti. President Trump is flying to China where he'll meet with Premier Xi Jinping. Fox's Aisha Hosni reports.
The president has already said the agenda with him and Xi has changed by a lot because of the Iran conflict. In fact, the administration and the U.S. ambassador to China, David Perdue, telling us that they do want Xi to almost put pressure on Iran because China is the number one buyer of Iranian oil.
Well, tensions are rising between the U.S. and Iran again after President Trump said the ceasefire is on life support. Fox's Trey Yinks is in Tel Aviv.
The Middle East is bracing for the possibility that the region returns to war in the days ahead. The Speaker of Iran's parliament, Mohammad Khalibaf, posted to X saying our armed forces are ready to deliver a well-deserved response to any aggression.
Pentagon officials say the war has cost at least $29 billion. America's listening to Fox News.
Sunny here from the Floral Parlor in downtown Paso Robles, across the street from the Boot Barn. My dad raised me to understand that capitalism creates freedom. Charity comes from churches and community, not government. Running a small business in California is tough, but I'm thankful for this wonderful community and appreciate your support of the Floral Parlor. Stop buying expired grocery store flowers and see the difference in design and longevity. Make someone's day. Send flowers with no delivery charge when you mention KPRL. Hope to see you soon at the Floral Parlor.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Stephen Moses, president of the Center for Long-Term Care Reform and visiting fellow at the Paragon Health Institute. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So we're talking here about some of the recent fraud that's been uncovered in Medicaid / Medi-Cal, and where some of it hits, and where, Steve, so where it really hit in Los Angeles, these big arrests that they made in 447 hospices in Los Angeles last month. It used to be, I mean, when I first learned about hospice care, because again, it's part of the long-term care conversation, right? I always thought that in order to be able to receive hospice care, you had to be within 6 months of imminent death. Somewhere along the way, and then I started noticing, hearing about people who were getting hospice care for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years. How did this all change in the system? And then again, it morphed in the case of California, apparently, according to the indictments and all that. All of these, fake home care service or hospice services were charging the government, but not really providing any care. How did this all happen?
Well, hospice is a Medicare service, and it's really a wonderful thing, and it's supposed to work the way you described it. Mm-hmm. When you're at the final months of your life, you get some special help, palliative care. I went through this with my late wife, who contracted brain cancer, a glioblastoma.
Mm-hmm.
And it was invaluable having the nurse come to the house, give us personal service, show me how to apply the injections that were needed. Anyway, wonderful service. Well, one day someone woke up in the federal government and realized that one-third of all the hospices in the United States were located in Los Angeles. Not California, just L.A. And they started looking at it, and what they found was that there were new hospices coming on the system constantly, and as they changed from simply paying the bills to withholding the funds until there was evidence that they were legitimate, that led to those cancellations that you referenced.
Mm-hmm.
Same kinds of problems are going on with general health care fraud, and specifically with long-term care.
Well, so a lot of that. So that goes back to the whole issue of, okay, we used to tell people, if you want to go on Medicaid and not buy long-term care insurance, you'll need to go to a nursing home. And nobody wants to go to a nursing home. Again, somewhere that changed, where people were able to get home care waivers and get their care at home through, and then lo and behold, in some states, I guess the big state here is Ohio. The Daily Wire, I don't know if you follow the Daily Wire, they did a wonderful expose on this. If not, I'll find the link and I can send it to you. But basically, in the state of Ohio, again, basically you're able to pay a family member to take care of you. And the point of the documentary was, well, family members are supposed to take care of you without getting paid. I mean, that was one of the points. And I mean, I get it. You know, it's hard on family caregivers to leave their job and lose part of their life to take care of an aging loved one. But apparently, again, this was done on such an industrial scale in Ohio that there's again billions of dollars of fraud. So again, when did that all change in the system?
Well, it started to change, 35 or 40 years ago. Nobody wanted to go to a nursing home. Medicaid paid so little to the nursing homes back then that they had a terrible reputation for poor access and quality. That's a whole other story. But the researchers began to say, well, gee, why pay all that money to institutionalize people when you could do it so much less expensively if you just took care of them at home? So that began the transition to home and community-based services as an alternative to nursing home care because the researchers insisted it must save money. Well, it does, maybe for some people for a while, but what we've found out as home and community-based care has gone from nothing to 87.9% of all long-term care provided by Medicaid nationally, we found that the people who get the home and community-based care and love it, it is definitely the preference, they end up eventually needing long-term care in a nursing home anyway as their condition deteriorates, so they end up costing more over the long run. This is one of the reasons why the total cost of home care and nursing home care has skyrocketed all along over the years. So the argument that somehow it was going to save money didn't hold. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't find a way to pay for it, but we're never going to find that way to pay for it through government programs that are always inadequately funded. What we have to do is find a way to wean the public off of this dependency, to get them thinking about long-term care early so that they pay privately for themselves and they have all of the wonderful options open to people who do pay privately.
So I do want to move on to Ken Dykewalt's stuff because I think he's got some important things. But you know, are you working on any stories? Is Paragon working on any stories? I know McKnight's is doing some good reporting on this as well. I mean, where do you see this Medicaid fraud story going from here? Do you think we're going to be seeing a lot more?
Wonderful that you asked. Yes, your listeners can go right now and Google Brian Blaze interviews Dr. Oz.
Okay.
Dr. Mehmet Oz, the administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. I just watched the interview myself this morning, and it's absolutely wonderful coverage of all the things that CMS is doing right now to find, control, and prosecute all of these fraud issues that we've talked about, the hospice, the general health care, the long-term care, and home and community-based services.
So, and by the way, folks, it's Brian Blaze, B-L-A-S-E, interviews Dr. Oz. So that, and I'm gonna check that out. I'm sure it's a good interview. Were there any quick takeaways you'd like to share? What jumped out at you most, Steve, from the interview?
Well, it was just all around excellent. He made the point that, well, it's avoiding me, but I would just urge your listeners to check that out. One particular point that I'm just not recalling.
Well, if you think about it, you can shift gears and say it. But, you know, and again, a lot of this fraud, I mean, everybody made fun of the DOGE program, but I think a lot of this, the lid was lifted on a lot of this stuff during that, 2 or 3 month period when DOGE was in operation. And really, it's also the use of AI and the speed of AI that's been able to uncover a lot of this fraud, correct?
Yeah, you know, it also has roots in COVID, where the whole idea was just throw money at it. And during the Biden administration in general, the attitude was not to program integrity and control costs. It was entirely get as many people on the programs as we can so that we can say that we have higher health insurance coverage than we really do. So only now are we beginning to turn it around to focus on spending the money properly.
You know.
I do capture this point. Dr. Oz made the point that what the Paragon Institute has called legalized money laundering, and this is where states, instead of investing their taxpayers' money to get federal matching funds for Medicaid, they go to providers or governmental entities, tax them to get extra money, and then leverage that up with the federal match, and then reimburse the sources that they taxed. Mm-hmm. It really is like legalized money laundering. But what he was saying is that, in a way, that's even worse than fraud.
Yes.
At least with fraud, you can go after it. It's remediable. But with the money laundering, it's done legally. And I think that's a real parallel to what's going on in the Medicaid long-term care eligibility, where we actually let people with substantial wealth qualify and evade the spend-down requirement and get also the best care available because of the T-money concept, pay privately for a while and you get the best care. That's legal, and it's almost like legalized fraud, which people often point out to me. How do they let this go on? And I say, well, I've been trying to stop it for 40 years. We've made a little progress here and there, but for the most part, it is wide open. And I was pointing out in making that observation that if we could just get Dr. Oz to look at that aspect of the issue, maybe we could get some results comparable to what's happening in the fraud area.
Well, and also, and a couple of other things come to mind, and then we will shift to Ken Dykewald here from my perspective. Number one, I'd like to see some enterprising investigative journalist start connecting the dots between these fraudulent providers of home care services or hospice services or whatever it is, and their political contributions to politicians in their states and local areas. I'm sure there's got to be a huge connection there, that because you're talking about money laundering and influence peddling and buying and all that kind of stuff. Number two, the other thing, and this brings it closer to home, as you probably know, in most states, the county is charged with providing the Medicaid services to its residents. And so a good portion of most county budgets are pass-through dollars from the feds and the state. And when this stuff starts getting, so those programs are being funded through nonprofits, NGOs, as it were. But the bottom line is, this is going to have a real ripple effect at all levels of government, and particularly at the county level, because the federal government's got to stop. They're going to run out of money, and they know it's going to happen. So I think that this is a real cautionary thing to count our county leaders here and our city leaders to not just expect this avalanche of dollars to continue to come in the door to pay for these services.
We're not going to run out of money. We ran out of money a long time ago. And every marginal dollar the federal government spends, it has to borrow, and that brings in the whole issue of what are we going to do when nobody wants to buy the bonds to fund those huge budget deficits. Well,
we're going to talk about that on the other side of the break real briefly. Let me move to Ken Dykewald, who I know. I mean, in a sense, I mean, I've seen you on panels with Dykewald before, if I'm not mistaken. And anybody who doesn't know who Ken Dykewald is has been sleeping for the last 30 or 40 years. He's a psychologist, gerontologist, and best-selling author of 19 books and he, in his most prominent book, his first one, I believe, was Age Wave. He lives up in San Francisco, so sometimes I get a little cranky with some of his political views. But other than that, he does really great work in the areas of gerontology. You shared a couple of his articles in your one of your most recent LTC newsletters. And so I'd like you to share, again, some of the highlights from that. You know, he says we're at a tipping point for liberating a new age of aging. So what are his takeaways on what we should be doing? Because people, everybody's lifespan is getting longer. We're living longer. We're not living more well necessarily, but we spend a boatload. We spend more than any other country on healthcare, and our outcomes are really bad. So what is he suggesting, Steve, that we ought to be focusing on?
Well, I followed Ken's work ever since that first book, Age Wave, that really turned me on to what's wrong with the government financing in the area of aging and long-term care. And Ken was the MC for a program we did with Paragon on long-term care and what's wrong with it and what can we do. But Ken's latest, everything he does is on the theme of making the most out of what's happening with aging. And now he's moved the terminology away from aging to longevity. How can we extend the health span, not just the lifespan? And he's talked for many years and does in this new book about how the aging process is changing. And we used to be, we would work hard, retire at 65, die by 70 or 75, and it was all over. Now it's just beginning when we get to the point of retirement. We may retire early but we may want to stay in the satisfying jobs we have, or if we leave them, start a whole new enterprise in the economy, or to volunteer, or go back to school and learn. And he points out how we have these cycles that we can go through that we really didn't have the time to do until the marvelous medical breakthroughs that have made it possible for us to live longer and have these options and choices.
So, and again, I mean, you make a really good point. It's that, you know, all of our social welfare systems, the Social Security, all those things, pension plans, the huge pension plans, they weren't designed for us to live this long, were they?
No, and that hasn't been as much Ken's focus, the financing, as I wish it would be, but we are really about to hit a fiscal wall. We have sent the message to the public since 1935 that you don't have to worry about retirement. We've got Social Security. And since 1965 that you don't have to worry about health care because we've got Medicare. And about long-term care, no worries, we've got Medicaid. And the irony is that well-intentioned promise desensitized the public to personal risk. So they have ignored the need to plan individually in too many cases. And the irony is, just as we get to the point with the baby boom generation that they need the props, the supports, the promises that the government has made, they are at risk. And we have in the 2030s, it really hits the fan, because that's when the baby boomers start turning 85, which is the key age for health care and long-term care expenses skyrocketing. And that's the same decade in which Social Security and Medicare run out of their trust funds, such as they are, and just have to cut back substantially unless somehow a solution is found.
All right. Well, you know, Steve, you are perfectly timed to the bumper music. I'm going to put you on hold this time as opposed to dropping you. Sorry about that. We'll be back in about 3 minutes, folks, with Steve Moses, and we're going to wrap up on some of the financial issues that Steve was just alluding to and how we're going to survive our current fiscal issues. So stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Taylor Riggs, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks finishing mixed with the tech-heavy Nasdaq falling as the AI trade retreats and inflation picked up faster than expected in April. Consumer prices climbing in April and hitting the highest level in 3 years as the Iranian war delivered higher gas prices. The consumer price index rising 0.6% on a monthly basis and up 3.8% annually. Tech was the worst performing sector while healthcare and consumer staples gained, semiconductor stocks leading today's declines, and oil prices are gushing with West Texas Intermediate crude at over $102 a barrel. The Dow winners, United Health Group, Amgen, and JP Morgan Chase. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, Salesforce, and Microsoft. The Dow rising 56 points, the Nasdaq lower by 186, S&P 500 down 12. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
You're probably listening to this in your car, so let me ask you. Would you drive without insurance? Of course not. So why is your retirement portfolio unprotected? Gold is portfolio insurance. It helps de-risk your savings when markets get unpredictable. Noble Gold Investments has helped thousands of Americans do exactly that, with no high-pressure sales and thousands of five-star reviews. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
We need help. At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Steve Moses, president of the Center for Long-Term Care Reform and visiting fellow for Paragon Health Institute. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. I want to mention again the RP Slo Rededicate 250 event that's happening this Sunday. Well, 1 to 3, I think it's like 1 to 3 p.m. So, and you can get more information on this. It should be a great event. There's going to be a lot of people there. You're going to want to meet, you know, your neighbors, a lot of the candidates and all that type of thing. You can get more information at rpsloc.org/events. Okay, and then finally, next week, before we get back to Steve, Joe Hamm is our next week is a gentleman. He's an author of a book called The Social Media Matrix, and he explains in really clear terms how social media is really messing with us. And I've discovered him, and I'm really looking forward to have him on. And then Greg Haskin, who's our executive director of CoLab, of course, and we'll be talking about county issues and upcoming elections and all that type of thing. So, Steve, one of the reasons why I think it's so important for us to get a grip on this wasteful spending in all of our entitlement programs, okay, Medicare, Medicaid, anything else, is this country is going to hit a fiscal wall. And you shared several articles about a week ago, one from Henry Paulson, who's the former Secretary of the Treasury, who talks about how we're almost at a crash point with our bonds in the United States, which is what funds all these entitlements. You also shared a great article from American Enterprise Institute written by Mark Warshawski on the fact that if the government does not do something about the Social Security Trust Fund in 2033, we're all going to take about a 20% hit on our Social Security because the system is going broke and because we don't have enough people working and the baby boom is going through the python. So summarize how all this is going to play out in relationship to all this waste, fraud, and abuse that we're seeing.
Well, nobody knows how it's going to play out. We're kind of watching the drama now, and we have tiptoed up to the edge of a fiscal cliff with the national debt approaching $40 trillion and the servicing of the debt becoming almost impossible, $1 trillion or more, just to pay the interest on the debt we have. Now, imagine if your family was in a fix like that, where your credit card bills were so high that you actually have to borrow money to make the minimum monthly payment. That's the state that the federal government is in right now. Social Security specifically, Mark Warshawski's paper on that was very good, but his solution is to means test Social Security, to make it more like Medicaid, a welfare program. And that scares me because it used to be we had welfare programs and social insurance programs, and social insurance supposedly had the dignity of private insurance. You paid into it and you got something back. It never really worked like that. It was always a pay-as-you-go system, charging current workers to pay older workers, but at least that was our intent. Well, we're turning those programs, Social Security and Medicare, into welfare programs at the same time, ironically, that we're changing the welfare programs, Medicaid and Supplemental Security Income, into entitlements by making them available to the middle class and affluent. The whole system is insane. We need people like Dr. Oz at CMS who are looking clearly and freshly at this problem to confront it. And at least they're doing that for fraud. I would love to get them as equally attentive to the issues we've talked about on the call.
So on Social Security, I mean, aren't there some actuarial fixes that can be put in place to soften some of these issues, like increasing the retirement age for younger people, you know, people that are, you know, still in the workforce, 40 years old, 40, you know, so they still have time to plan. Wouldn't that kind of thing do something to help the Social Security system?
Well, we tried that back in 1983 and moved the age of retirement from 65 out to 67 gradually over a period of time. But here we are with the same fix with only a few years to go before the trust fund, which is phony anyway. It's just an accounting gimmick. All the extra cost of Social Security has to come out of the general funds. We could raise the age of eligibility for Social Security and Medicare. But according to Washansky, we don't get enough of a solution from that. So we have to do other things that are really unfortunate. And the real tragedy is that we've let it go this so long that we've kicked the can down the road.
Yeah.
So we're really stuck.
I've often said that if insurance companies ran their companies like our politicians run our government, they'd be perp walking those guys out the door, the government guys out the door.
Exactly.
All right, Steve, it's always a pleasure to have you on and to talk to you. We'll have you back soon. I think there's going to be a lot more to talk about in the coming months. So thank you so much. Folks, thank you. Thanks, Steve. Folks, thanks for joining us today. I'll see you next week with author Joe Hamm and Greg Haskett. So enjoy the rest of your week. Great weather.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.